On October 26, 1942, Burt Bank realized he was going blind. That day he was working on the farm. He was supposed to be pulling thistles and weeds, but he couldn't see what he was doing, and he kept yanking out the vegetable plants instead. A guard swooped down upon him, wielding a club, but before he struck the first blow, he realized something was wrong with this prisoner. The look in Bank's eyes gave it away. His stare was dull and unfocused. He clearly couldn't tell what he was doing. "Everything was a blur," Bank remembered. "I could distinguish day from night, but I couldn't see my hand in front of my face." Bank's world was fast closing in on him. In a few weeks, he was almost totally blind. Scores of men at Cabanatuan were in the same predicament. The blindness was caused by vitamin deficiency. At first, the Japanese either didn't understand the problem or thought the prisoners were faking. On a number of occasions, the guards beat these prisoners senseless for various infractions before the reality of their impairment finally sank in. Growing tired of these miscellaneous assaults, a number of men took to hanging little placards around their necks, "Blind prisoner, please do not hit," and requested indoor details that demanded little in the way of visual acuity. Bank, for his part, left the farm and spent his workdays twisting hemp threads into rope. A young Japanese guard took pity on Bank. His name was Hirota, an 18-year-old kid from Kobe who had worked in the Bureau of Statistics before the war. Hirota seemed more intelligent than many of the other guards, and he was a perfect gentleman. Bank never saw him strike a single prisoner. He would save scraps of food for Bank, or give him cigarettes, which he could then barter for food. Hirota spoke a little English, and always loved to brush up on his skills. The two would spend hours talking about their hometowns, about the war, about what they hoped to do with their lives once the fighting was over. One day, he produced a map of the United States, and Bank, after much squinting, was able to show Hirota his home state of Alabama. He invited Hirota to come visit him in Tuscaloosa.
"I don't know how it happened that we became such friends," Bank said. "Maybe it was because I was so obviously blind, fumbling around the camp. Hirota-san could see that I needed help, but he was kind to me and decent. I'll never forget him."
In the fall of 1944, planes began flying over Cabanatuan, American planes that had taken off from Navy aircraft carriers. Increasingly, there were dogfights in the sky. It began to seem that the tide of the war was turning in the prisoners' favor. Then, in early January of 1945, the prisoners at Cabanatuan could hear the booms of American artillery leading up to the invasion of Lingayen Gulf. With so many tangible signs of America's comeback, the prisoners began to talk about how they would be liberated, how the big day would unfold, the mode and style in which the rescue would happen. Knowing what they already knew about General MacArthur's taste for high theatrics, they imagined that the Army's arrival would be something grand. Some of us thought MacArthur would personally enter the camp one day about noon with a large fleet of Harley-Davidson motorcycles, and that he'd be sitting in a convertible staff car with a large entourage, said Burt Bank. But I knew MacArthur wouldn't stop there. He'd be riding on a white stallion. Like so many of the men, however, Thomas and Bank had ambivalent emotions about MacArthur's return. Their elation at the prospect of imminent freedom was soured by darker premonitions. The closer the American army drew, the more fearful many of the POWs became that the Japanese would eliminate them. They felt that the Imperial Army, locked in its death grip, might resort to anything. Given what the men of Cabanatuan understood about the Japanese martial mentality, with its various echoes and borrowings from the stark codes of samurai days, the hope for Japanese mercy seemed naive. The fear of a massacre was very prevalent, Thomas said. Our hopes were high, but we were also very, very scared. There were rumors running through the camp about how and when they were going to do it to us. We knew that was a distinct possibility. We figured the time was getting close. We didn't know how or when it would happen, but we figured anything might trigger it. We had to be on the alert all the time. Wherever we walked inside the camp, we kept an eye out for a pathway ditch we might suddenly need to jump in. The mass murder at Puerto Princesa Camp on the island of Palawan had occurred on December 14th, only several weeks earlier,
and vague stories about the atrocity were seeping into Cabanatuan through the Filipino grapevine. The grim news filtered to us in bits and pieces, recalled Dr. Hibbs, and by early January it was confirmed. That massacre only reinforced our fears that we would be liquidated.